please state your name?
Hi, I'm Tom Everett Scott. I am 6'2", and I'm based in Los Angeles.
Turn to what have you done with my heart? You know, back in the mid 90s, the boys were into Kurt Cobain, Eddie Vedder, not this guy. Give me the Velvet Fog, I said. Good old Mel Torme. Also, the name of a lesser known Batman villain, the Velvet Fog. Hey, everybody, welcome to Slate Your Name, the podcast where we talk to actors, or I, an actor, talk to other actors about the ups and downs of working in Tinseltown. I'm your host, Michael McMillan, and this week we're sitting down with an old chum of mine, Mr. Tom Everett Scott. Tom is an actor that you've known for a number of years now. He got his big break in Tom Hanks' directorial debut, That Thing You Do, and went on to do a number of film and television projects. I worked with him on a TNT series called Saved that lasted, sadly, one season, but Tom and I became lifelong friends during that. He was most recently in the series I'm Sorry, with Andrea Savage, and is coming up in a new TV series on Amazon Prime called The Summer I Turned Pretty. We'll be talking to Tom in just a few short minutes, but before we do that, let's have a quick company meeting. I want to welcome everybody who has joined the Patreon, Slate Your Name, The Green Room, ever since last episode. There are quite a few of you. If I may, I'd like to thank you all by name. Nimbus Fly Hunter, S. Nicole Ochoa, Jason Dutton, Tommy Kelly, Paige, and J.M. Aiello. Thank you so much for going over to patreon.com/slateyourname and supporting the show for $5 a month and receiving your weekly bonus episodes over in the green room. I truly appreciate it. Another way you can support the show is by going to Apple Podcasts and giving us a 5-star review like this one. Followed MM from the BCC. Followed MM from BCC because I love his interviewing style. Such a natural at getting people to talk. A wonderful show for anyone who follows the performing arts. Well, thank you so much. That is from listener Lady of Strange. Okay, let's get to Tom. We really got to talking in this one, which is very easy to do with him. It's truly a conversation between two old acting buddies. Here is my chat with Tom Everett Scott. Tom, I'm surprised to hear that you're only 6'2".
Do I seem taller?
You seem like a much... I would peg you at 6'3", maybe even 6'4".
That's just how I carry myself.
That's true. I mean, maybe that's just because I've always seen you as a big brother in my eyes.
There it is. You're always looking up to me.
Big brother model.
I get that a lot. I honestly do get that a lot. I don't know why that is. I must just seem taller. I also have massive feet. And so people see the feet and they're like, oh, he's a giant.
Everyone go to wikifeet.com/Tom Everett Scott right now.
Bono. Bono. Oh,
we'll give you a minute. Tom, how are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing great. So you have recently celebrated an anniversary of sorts.
Yes, I did.
It's been 25 years since the film That Thing You Do came out in its theatrical release. That was your first big thing.
It really was. And yes, and celebrating that milestone is pretty huge. I'm pretty excited. I got to say, I need someone to check the math because it doesn't feel like it's been 25 years, you know, like that's a long ass time. And I'm still a young guy. I'm just starting out in this business, to be honest.
I mean, you're doing great so far. I just looked at your IMDb for a segment coming up later. And my God, like, you haven't stopped since then.
It's just about keeping moving, like, you know, keep swimming like a shark needs to keep swimming. That's my motto. Yeah, that was like the first Big, yeah, that was the first big thing I ever did, for sure. Massive. It's still the biggest thing I've ever done.
I don't think that's true. But I mean, that must have been huge at the time, because it was Tom Hanks, who was like in the middle of his like 90s huge taking over. I don't want to say like taking over of Hollywood, but he was like, you know, Toy Story is Woody. He's got Forrest Gump under his belt. He's got two Oscars. He's got Philadelphia. He's just like, I feel like Tom Hanks was never bigger. And I remember I was at Interlochen Arts Academy, and I got my mother got me a weekly subscription to Entertainment Weekly, and I had no internet, so that was basically at this boarding school in the woods that I went to. That was like one of my only lifelines to find out what was going on. And I remember you being on the cover with Tom Hanks and Liv Tyler, I believe, and I was like, "Who's this guy? Who's this guy think he is?" I do remember feeling a little jealous.
Yeah.
But then, but you were like this also, like, there was this like young Tom Hanks vibe about you as well that I felt was like, how did this big job for you come along? How did this happen?
It was, like you said, the height of Tom Hanks's career. So he had just won back-to-back Oscars and been in one of the biggest movies, Apollo 13. You know, it was just, yeah, he was absolutely the tippy top. I was doing theater in New York. My agent called me at the theater and said, "I want to submit you for this script, for this movie. It's Tom Hanks's directorial debut. He wrote the script. I want to submit you. We have no more headshots of you. Will you please find a headshot and bring it over here so we can submit it?"
This was 25 years ago.
Yeah, there you go. And I walked into the theater, and in the lobby where they had the headshots stapled to the corkboard when you walk in and see who was in the show, yeah, tore that down from the wall. and took a subway to my agent's office and gave him a headshot. And he said, he handed me the script. And
you're like, "Can you get one without a pinhole in it? Or without staples torn in?"
This, what are these weird holes? What's this mustache drawn on here?
Exactly. And I just also, too, it's such a testimony to, like, the struggling young actor in New York. They're like, "Crap, I cannot go to Kinko's. I do not have the money to print up 100 black and white headshots right now. I got to go. I gotta just take this from the theater lobby."
I mean, that was going to dip into my cigarette money, you know?
Yes. Very important. How much were cigarettes back then? $3.19, maybe?
Somewhere between $3, $4, $5 a pack.
Yeah. That's all like included in the actor's monthly budget.
It really was. I mean, you had to like budget your week, power, water, food, you know, cigs.
Coffee.
Yeah. The essentials.
Were you a carton man or were you a by the pack man?
No, man. Carton really spelled trouble. Like, I've got a real problem.
Yeah, carton is like, "No, I am committed to this." Whereas you could always tell yourself it's the last pack you're going to buy.
Yeah, you're just giving in. If you're buying cartons, you're just giving in. Whereas if you're buying at least the idea that I could quit at any time.
Yeah. This is just a phase. I just do this socially. This isn't a thing.
Yeah.
Anyway. I think we got off topic, but you run.
Did we?
You're heading downtown. You're heading downtown on a speeding subway train.
So I got the audition, and the first audition is with just the casting director, Howard Fuhr, the late great Howard Fuhr. Okay,
this guy. What else has he done?
Okay,
do you remember?
Not a question I can answer off the top of my head, but we should look him up because he's an award-winning casting director, and he probably cast some big Tom Hanks movies prior to that. That's probably how he got that job. Or Jonathan Demme movies. He probably cast Silence of the Lambs and stuff like that. He was like one of the big guys at that time. And Howard Fuhr, when I met him and I walked in, and I was told, like, Howard
Tommy,
has...
you nailed it. Silence of the Lambs, yeah. Moonstruck, Mississippi Burning, Dead Poets Society. There you go. That's all you need to know. What Women Want.
And having cast Dead Poets Society probably made perfect sense to Tom to have him cast this movie, which also had, you know, cast of young people that, very similar. I don't know. I walked in. I was told by my agent, you know, Howard has like a breathing problem. He was like a big man, and he would talk and he would take deep, loud inhales. And you just were worried about his health at every second that he was talking to you. But he was a lovely guy, and he had me read a couple scenes, and then he said, "Great, that was great. I'm gonna have you come back in to meet the director." And I was like, "Okay, the director is Tom Hanks, right?" Because of the way he said it, he just kind of blew past the Tom Hanks part and just said director, and I was like, "Well, wait a minute, wait."
No, he actually said the director.
Exactly. Yeah.
Making fun of a dead man who gave you your big break. I'm going straight to hell.
He was so lovely because I met him years later. I auditioned for the Mel Gibson movie, What Women Want.
Oh, yeah.
And I walked in and Howard was there and we probably hadn't seen each other since That Thing You Do. And he said, "Tom, you know I love you. You're not going to get this movie. You're too tall.
Again!
Mel Gibson will not work next to you.
You should have told him I'm only 6'2". I'm not that tall."
I said, "I get it all the time. It's the feet, Howard. It's just the feet.
It's my big feet. It throws everyone off.
Just frame out the feet."
So you go in for that call. How long did you have to wait for that call? Like, how many nights were you spending thinking, "I'm going to go meet Tom Hanks, I guess. I'm going to audition for Tom Hanks"?
I was doing theater at the time, like I said. The people I was hanging around with were other actors around the same age, everybody wanting the same thing. I did not tell people about big auditions like this for a couple reasons. I didn't want to jinx it. And I didn't want to be like, "Yeah, I've got this," you know, like be bragging. It was not cool. It was not cool to come in and talk about your big auditions. So a lot of that I had to keep to myself, which I think caused extra stress. I didn't even want to tell my mom. I didn't want to tell anybody. The only person who knew was my now wife, then girlfriend, who we probably had only been dating like a year, which is a long time, but
yeah.
Not compared to how long I've been with her. It's a very short amount of time. But so she knew. And what was weird that Howard Feuer told me was that he didn't say like know a specific scene or two scenes or three scenes. He told me to know the whole script.
Oh, give me a fucking
break. I'm not kidding. And what's weird about this, and you know, I've never cleared this up with the big man, but that is not a That
Santa
is not
Claus?
Yeah. Yeah, because I wrote him directly after right. that.
"Dear Santa, please give me..."
"Please give me a larger brain so I can memorize this entire script." The big man. The tippy top.
TH.
Mr. White. TH. I've never asked him. That's not a very Tom Hanks thing to request. He's not...
Call him right now. Can we get him on the phone? Let's get him on the podcast. Let's find out.
Let me see. Let me search my contacts.
Yeah.
I forget what I have him in here under.
Quick question. Just say, "Quick question, Tom." "Tom, it's Tom. Quick quiz."
Oh, I have him in here under Santa Claus. Hold on.
There you go. Yeah.
So I memorize the whole, I pretty much learn the whole thing.
God.
Like,
and did it pay off? I obviously got the role, but like, did it it paid off. Play? Yes, but yeah, dumb question, Michael. But
so
did it
dumb. This podcast is stupid.
This podcast is so fucking dumb. Did that come into play in the callback?
So it was the scenes that Howard Feuer had me do the first time I read for him. I mean, it was like there was a scene with the Faye character, there was a scene talking about it was maybe the making the right. I can't even remember. You know, there was a scene, there was an audition scene that never made it into the final draft of the script.
Mm-hmm.
There was some, Faye and Guy were talking in a hotel room at some point. I think after Jimmy broke up with her, there was a whole scene. I think that eventually, like in the final version was the coffee shop scene at the end of the movie. But either way.
And no instruments. You didn't have to play drums for Tom Hanks. At this stage?
No, man, no. No, even though I played trumpet all the way from like fourth grade to 12th grade and was in the band and in the jazz band. I can read music and all that stuff. And I learned like three or four chords on guitar. So on my resume in the back of my headshot, it says trumpet and guitar, like under special, right. special skills. What was on your special skills of your resume?
That's a really good question. I was just thinking this. I think it's like...
horseback riding.
Yeah, I think drawing and cartooning was on there because it's something that I could do that would never, you know, I guess if they needed me for a few insert shots about the one movie or TV show I'm going to get where I actually play a cartoonist, that's right. It would come in handy.
So specific.
Or I'm just playing a random, like, you know, boardwalk characterist.
Do you think that, like, at any point a casting director flipped it over and went, cartoon drawing? Okay. I think we have our guy.
I thought it was just maybe, I mean, I was scrambling because I'm like, I can't play sports. I think I had juggling on there.
Yes.
I learned how to juggle.
Definitely juggling.
But boy, I mean, like through gritted teeth and bated breath, you know.
Stage
but
combat might be on there.
Stage combat, dialects, you know, Irish, oh, yeah. British, oh, yeah. Scottish, just any of the like... oh, any man. Of my ancestors' dialects that I could
what
do.
What if somebody had said like, oh, can we hear a little bit of this Irish dialect?
Yeah, I'd be like, the white to the fire, the white to the fire.
I have one phrase for a Russian dialect. It's, this building is closed. That's it, but it sounds
this
good.
This building is closed.
Yeah.
Yeah. And now, you know, it's so rare, if at all, but like they're never going to hire, rarely. I mean, when are they going to hire an American to play any European role? It's the other way around now.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, you know, no, we have this Australian that can do an American accent. We
yeah, exactly.
This Brit that can do a perfect American accent. But they don't need us anymore.
I went in for an audition once for the Princess Diaries 2 for Gary Marshall. And at Disney, it was like early on in L.A. And the character was British. And I was like, yes, I can pull out my British dialect. And I remember going in and I was like, all right, I'm not going to say much up top. I'm just going to be like, hello, hello, and go into it. I swear to God, ever since I made fun of that casting director, I now have a wheeze in my chest, and I feel like everybody can hear it. Guys, karma is real.
Karma is real. So... Howard Feuer, the late, great Howard Feuer, is now haunting and possibly possessing Michael.
I apologize. That was insensitive. But anyway, so I went in, and I read the scene. And Gary Marshall goes, that was really good. Do you think you'd be able to do it in an American accent? And I was like, I'm from Kansas. And the room was like, ah! Like, big reaction from the room. Laughs. One of the best auditions I ever had.
Definitely.
And then they wanted me to screen test for it. I was working on What I Like About You at the time. And What I Like About You is like, nope, sorry, you're going to be working. We're probably you're going to, you know, we're going to be filming in January when they need you. Like they were like, these are the dates. And I was like, come on. You know, I was just, you know, series regular, but, you know, not the lead of the show.
Yeah, it's like they're holding you back, man.
Yeah. So I had to pass on that screen test. Obviously didn't get that part. And then the weeks that they were shooting, I was not in those episodes. And, you know, I was just like, come on. And then I got written off the show. I was like, come on. I got to, this would have been fine with everybody.
Adding insult to injury. So let me get this straight. When you walked into the audition room with Gary Marshall, you walked in and said, hello, hello.
Hello, governor.
Okay. And they were like, yeah. Can, if we needed you to do this.
Blimey.
In an accent that's obviously not your natural.
I just started mumbling like that, you know, just in a vague, weird accent. So what did you say when you walked into the room and Tom Hanks was there and you finally met Tom Hanks?
Well, first I want to go back to your Gary Marshall audition. Because
this isn't about me.
Didn't Chris Pine get that part?
I think he did, which means I definitely would have gotten it. Although... would that mean that I would have gotten all of Chris Pine's roles? Had.
Yes.
I think Chris Pine was playing the other guy.
Well, he was.
Did he play a British dude in it? I never saw the movie.
He may not have. I don't really remember.
There were two dudes. There was like the British guy, this guy. Hello. No, that's not how I did it. I don't know. And then there was Chris Pine.
That's a very specific British guy right there.
Yeah. I knew one guy and I interviewed him and just nailed his accent. I'm not sure where he's from.
That guy sounds hilarious, and I need to talk to him and get his accent down for my next job. Chris Pine and I were working together on this movie with Diane Keaton called Surrender Dorothy, and Chris Pine is my first boy-on-boy kiss, and the second is Johnny Galecki. Hot.
So I saw the one with Johnny Galecki
That was on stage.
Little Dog Laughed.
That's right. But with the one with Chris Pine, that was the first one, and he hadn't broken out at all. He was very much just starting out. And while we were in San Diego filming this, and we were all staying at this hotel together, and we became very close, the cast and stuff, and we would just hang out. And one night we watched Princess Diary 2 that he had just done. And
Did he have a British accent in it?
I don't think so.
So it wasn't my role. It was the other guy.
But they asked you if you could do your role in an American accent.
Yes.
So maybe he was asked the same thing.
But this guy was from England, so I was confused by that question.
I can't remember. All I know is that me and the rest of the cast commented on how great Chris Pine's hair was in Princess Diaries 2. And we all saw that he was going to be a big star.
Wow.
Because he was fantastic in it.
Did that like turn you on a little more?
It just made the kissing scene so much easier. I was like,
exactly.
Imagine him with that hair from Princess Diaries 2.
Yeah. I'm kissing a future movie star right now.
Oh boy, eat your hearts out.
Yeah.
Everybody.
So you go into the room, Tom Hanks is there. We got to get through this story because I have a break coming up. Come on.
All right. So at the time that this was happening, I was doing theater, like I said, and I was trying to hold it all in. And I was learning this whole script and I was super stressed. And I was about to meet literally my idol. Like he just was. I was a huge Bosom Buddies fan. And big, and all the other things he had done. But I mean, I'm talking about like me and my sister used to like watch Bosom Buddies and like pantomime what Tom and who played his buddy in Bosom Buddies?
Oh, it's Christ, the guy from who's in Newhart. shoot.
Anyway,
I should know this.
I do know it, and it's just my brain is now old because it's been 25 years since this happened. So me and my sister, this is a stupid story.
Peter Scolari.
So we would imitate what they would do at the beginning of that. It was like a Billy Joel song. You know, it was great. So here I am going to the audition.
Yeah, people forget, by the way, people forget like now, because Tom Hanks is like America's grandfather. Like in the 80s, like Money Pit is like one of the funniest performances I've ever seen. Like he was
so
the funniest guy. I was like, two funniest guys, Steve Martin and Tom Hanks. When I was a kid, I was like, "Those, no one's funnier."
It's so true. He really was. He could do anything, and he was an actor's like he was perfect model of like, okay, he can do the serious stuff, he can do the funny stuff. He seems really cool. So here I am going to meet the guy who I basically am like modeling my whole career after, and I'm just like riddled with nerves. It's one of those moments where you're just like, oh, I'm gonna sabotage myself just because I'm nervous. There was nobody there. It was at Jonathan Demme's offices in New York, like near Chelsea, kind of like 24th and like 6th Avenue area. I go upstairs. I go to his offices with these huge, they had the whole floor of this building, maybe two or three floors of this like cool little like old brownstone or something like that. And in the waiting room, you could hear Tom Hanks laughing from across these production offices.
Ha 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 ha. Is that pretty good, Tom?
Perfect.
Nailed it, right?
Perfect. Perfect. And I'm just like, that's him. That is clearly Tom Hanks. I've memorized that laugh. And that made my nerves just spike. So I went to the bathroom, splashed some cold water on my face, like got my shit together as best I could. They called me in. I walked in. There was a person there to like run the camera. There was a person there to read the scenes. Howard was there and Tom was there. And Tom, I think, took one look at my face and he was like, hey guys, just like clear out. Just like give us a second. We're just going to talk for a second. And so they all left. It was just me and him.
Wow.
And he just like, you know, took like my headshot and like thing and like read. Oh, okay. Okay. All right. So special skills here. It says trumpet, it says guitar. So you have some sense of rhythm, right? I was like, yeah. And he's like, great. I'm hiring actors. We'll worry about the music stuff later. But like, you know, but that's good to know that you have that. And what are you doing now? And I was like, oh, I'm doing theater. And he's like, oh boy, your theater buddies are going to hate you if you start doing movies. And it's like, all this stuff is just calming me down.
Wow. What a gift.
Right. And he gets me down to the point where I'm just like, oh, phew. Like, I'm good. And he calls him back in, and I do the two scenes, and he says, great. And I walk out of there thinking, like, what the hell just happened? That went way better than I thought it was, you know, going to go. And I don't know. It was great. And then just to quickly take you through, like, what happened after that, it was a callback to come in and read with Liv. And that went really well. He had us just read together, and he was giving her notes. He wasn't giving me any notes. He just looked at me and he said, don't worry about it. Just don't do anything. You don't have to worry about doing a thing. You can just read it. Don't worry about it. And in your mind, you're like, oh, good. This is like good, right? And then he had us stand up next to each other, and she's tall too. Here we go with the height thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that was good because I was like, oh, thank God she's not like, you know, this huge discrepancy, because I could have definitely not got the part then. Boy, I'm telling you, you know, so far in this podcast, I've never realized how like big a deal the height thing is.
Yeah, it really is. People, I mean, I think I'm 6'1". I don't know if it's ever truly gotten in the way, but it's a thing.
It's a thing. Okay, so then he takes a Polaroid camera out. He goes, I just want to get a picture of you two. And my brain is like spinning. I am like so... I'm trying to repress any thoughts that this is going well, to just so that I'm not like jinxing it or, you know, and he took a picture of us. And right before he took the picture, he handed me a pair of sunglasses and I put them on for the picture, which is just like, is this happening? So then he takes the picture. He's going to keep talking to her because other dudes are going to come in and read with her. And I go to say goodbye to her, and jokingly, he just goes, get out of here. And he like pushes me out. And again, I walk out of that one and go, that could not have gone better. The next meeting was with Jonathan Demme alone. I think Tom was like, I think I want to cast this guy. You know, will you just check him out? And me and Jonathan Demme just sat in his office and talked about like theater in New York and all kinds of stuff. He's the sweetest man alive. Thank you, know, RIP, Jonathan Demme, genius, sweet man. Had collected all this gorgeous, like, art, and we were just talking about different things, and I think I passed that test. And the next thing I knew, Tom Hanks called me at my apartment to tell me I got the part.
Jeez. How stoked were you when you got that news?
It was unbelievable. I was so excited. It was just like I was hanging on, I was holding my breath the whole time to get this part, knowing that it was just like going to be the biggest thing that had ever happened to me.
Did you march straight into that theater, go, fuck all of you losers, and then quit the play and walk out?
No.
You replaced your headshot with Tom Hanks's headshot in the lobby.
And then drew a big mustache on it. I know. Jenny and I like held the phone between us and listened to Tom Hanks's voice. And we walked we walked to our favorite bar, invited everybody to come down, have a drink, and tell them the news. And sure enough, there were friends of mine that were just like, couldn't really be happy, you know. You're like, oh,
yeah.
There's a downside to this, you know. Your friends just get like really jealous and like, yeah.
Well, I don't know if it's jealousy as much as it is that thing where they can't help but instantly measure where they're at.
Absolutely.
Going, oh, fuck. I'm fucked.
You're 100% like, right. You're 100%
like,
right.
I'm not getting.
We all
there's
get
an another opportunity I'm not getting, which means, fuck, I should be where Tom's at now. Like, if you have a peer who gets a big gig, it raises the bar for everybody else.
That's
in the group.
So true. It just and you reflect back on yourself. Mm-hmm. You're right. It's not so much jealousy as it is, what am I doing?
Pure self-hate. That's
right.
Really all it comes down to.
And as far as the theater thing went, yeah, I mean, I'm still like best friends with that guy that we started that theater company with. And but there were rocky times, and I think, you know, a lot of stuff happens when certain people start, you know, taking off when others aren't.
Yeah.
But that's a discussion for another podcast.
Well, congrats. I mean, the way you told that story, the look on your face, I just have to say congratulations all over again for that win. That's
thanks,
a beautiful
man.
Story.
Thank you.
We're gonna take a break. When we come back, we're gonna go down a little memory lane, more memories with Tom Everett Scott.
Nailed it.
All right, I'm talking to my good friend, Tom Everett Scott. We met years ago on the set of Saved, TNT's short-lived, I almost said pandemic series, but we were...
Paramedic.
Paramedic, thank you. A real quick question before we move on. Do you remember, this is always, I always love this, like, do you remember the other guys who were up for that role that you beat out? Was there anybody else that you're like, oh, that guy?
Okay. Not me. No, not for Saved. Saved was like, I mean,
one cares about Saved, Tom, for that thing you do.
Oh, wait. I'm so sorry. I thought we were on to Saved.
No.
Do I remember who I beat up for that role? I know that Ethan Hawke read at the table read that Steve Zahn was cast from that table read. That's an interesting story. So basically Tom Hanks had the script and he wanted people to read it like they do. At a table read, and you sometimes sometimes you cast the table read to be sort of, you know, you want, sometimes you want big actors at that thing just to kind of get everybody excited about it, right? Like, you know, I'm sure you know what I'm talking about. And like, they, Ethan Hawke, I think, was a huge star, and they had him do it. I don't know why Ethan Hawke didn't play Guy Patterson. I really don't. I don't know if he had a previous commitment or if he was never supposed to do it, or I have no
clue. Probably doing Hamlet, you know, he wanted to go play Hamlet somewhere.
Yeah, so I can't really say that I beat out Ethan Hawke for the role. I just know that he read it at the table read. And yeah, I also know that somebody else was supposed to read Lenny and couldn't be there, and so the casting director called whatever agent represented that actor and said, do you have somebody else who can read Lenny for this table read? And they submitted Steve. Tom Hanks had no idea who Steve Zahn was, but Steve did such an amazing job at that table read. Tom walked up to him afterwards, like at the elevator bank, and was like, hey, do you want to do this movie?
Wow.
Yeah.
Great. Yeah. That's the way to do it. Because I've done some of those table reads, and that's the kind of feedback you want. And typically, they just say, thank you. And then
I can't imagine any better feedback than that. This guy running out to the elevator. Wait. I need you.
Tom Hanks is chasing me down. So, okay, now that you brought it up, since you brought it up, Saved, the Saved audition, I remember meeting you at the costume fitting, the wardrobe fitting for that show. You'd been doing TV for a while. You had a big stint on ER. You were still doing films.
Yep.
How did Saved come along?
Michael Wright, who ran TNT at the time, was and most likely is, I don't know, a fan. We'll see. I'll text him. I'll text him right now.
Yeah, let's see. He's under the Easter Bunny.
He is an Easter Bunny. He wanted me to play that part. And he was like, this is the guy I want. And David Manson, who created the show, and Darnell, who directed the pilot episode, wanted to just make sure that I wasn't, you know, wrong for it completely. And I remember taking a lunch with David and Darnell and hitting it off with them. And then that was kind of it. And then I got the job.
So you've been pretty much offer only for a while now, like, you
only
know,
on
do you still
things.
Audition for stuff?
I do. And if because I know that that is something that, you know, you and I focus a lot of our conversations around, I think is one of the most interesting parts of being an actor is the audition process. Yeah, man, I still audition for stuff. And sometimes booking something from an audition is the most satisfying way to get a job.
Yeah. Because you're like, still got it.
Yeah. You're like, still. Yeah. Yeah, man, it is. It's like the, you go out for it and get it. It's
it's funny because, you know, I often hear like from, you know, you just have to not give a fuck, you know, which I get that. I don't know if I am capable of that. I'm, you know, unless I take something like a beta blocker and just calm my nerves down or something like, yeah, which I've never done, but talked about that as well on the show. Yeah. What's the thing that you're like, if you're going to tell a young person who's like got their big Tom Hanks audition or any audition, like what's the thing that you would say, just remember to do this?
Gosh, that's such a great question because it's such a process and it's so personal and specific to me.
But that's good advice in itself, actually, because I think the thing is to keep in mind with this stuff for those who are listening, who are interested in pursuing a career in acting, is that there isn't one way.
No.
There's not one way to go about this.
There's no formula.
There's none. There's none. And I think it's a thing where we're constantly looking for a formula. Like actors are constant. It's like we're alchemists or like magicians in like a castle in medieval times. And we're just like, what special ingredient do I need to help me get this? You know, there really isn't one.
It's so true. You know? And it starts so early on in the process, throwing just, you know, things at the wall and seeing what sticks. Like, I remember just in acting school, the acting teacher, one of the exercises when we first started was to walk up by yourself in front of the class and stand there. And the rest of the class would write down the first things that came to their head about you when they looked at you without you talking. And just without them knowing you, probably this is the first day, second day of class kind of thing. And
really
then,
tall,
yes,
huge,
almost
feet.
Too tall.
Too yeah. tall.
Feet, this I've never seen
custom
this
shoes.
Size foot before. Does he have a deal with a boat company?
Web idea, Wiki feet. Just putting that down for later.
Oh, this is, I see, this is someone... In college with me back in 1980.
Yep, 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 okay. yep. You inspired WikiFeet.
Before there was even an
it's
internet.
Story. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So then the teacher would read off what everybody wrote about you when you got up there. And the purpose of that was to, so you knew what strangers thought of you when you walked up. So that you knew what... You know, what people see when you walk into an audition. And I was just like, I guess that's helpful. I don't know. Having your peers like write down shit about you.
Yeah.
I don't know if anybody felt comfortable being honest at that point. I think it's also really important. I got one of the greatest opportunities when I was starting out. I auditioned for a movie called Hackers. And Diane Crittenden, who cast Star Wars, like she cast the original Star Wars. She was a huge casting director at the time. This was in New York. I went and auditioned for Hackers. At the end of the audition, she said, I'm not going to cast you. You're too young. You're too new. But I think you know, maybe could benefit from seeing a few more auditions. Would you like to come back and be my reader? And I was like, yeah, that'd be amazing. And so I read for her for the next round of auditions. And after someone would leave, she'd say, what'd you think? And I would say, oh, well, I thought they were great. She's like, yeah, I know. But let's, you know, we're doing this for you. What did you think? And I was like,
Wow.
I was like, I don't know. I guess when they came in and they started like, you know, explaining that they didn't feel good or that they were sorry that they were late. I was like, you know, maybe that wasn't the best way to start the audition. She was like, right. Don't come in and give excuses. Just come in and do your audition. I was like, that's good. She goes, and whenever a casting director or director, anybody asks if you have any questions before we start, the answer is no.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was like, that is amazing. Because you think you're supposed to sound like you have questions and are eager to. Nope.
Nope. That's what I say. I go, nope. I said, obviously, if you see something you don't like, let me know.
you ever try that. Like the next time you go in and you say no, they go, great.
Yeah. Yeah. It's true. It's true. That actually, I do live by that. Unless there's like a important, if I didn't get the script and there's like, I just want to double check this is happening because of this, you know?
Sure.
If there's a context thing, then maybe
absolutely.
I'll ask. But usually I'm like, no. That's great. All right. Well, I mean, like I said, you have not stopped working since that thing you do. Your IMDb profile is insane. I'm going down this list and I'm going to name some roles.
Okay.
That you've played by their character name, and you're going to tell me what project that was from. We're going to try to, you know, if you can't remember, that's fine too. This is fun.
This is not necessarily fair, but okay, it will be fun.
Okay. This is called Show Me Your Name. All right, here we go. Here we got one. Elliot Greb. Two B's. Who is Elliot Greb?
Elliot Greb. Wow.
Uncredited in this project as well, which I found fascinating.
You mean like
you were uncredited?
Uncredited? Wait,
yeah,
that's crazy.
Means you weren't even listed in the credits, which I don't understand.
Why the hell wouldn't I want my be credited?
I don't.
Because usually that's like a personal choice. It's like, I don't want to be associated with this fucking thing.
Well, I'll give you a little hint. This has become a bit of a cult classic.
Oh, is this, it's weird that it wouldn't be, is it, National Lampoon's Van Wilder?
Yes, it is. What role did you... Who was Elliot Greb, and why were you uncredited?
Well, I think that doesn't make sense that I'm not credited. That doesn't make any sense at all. But I will tell you the quick story behind that movie and why I'm in it is because Richard Kind was supposed to play Elliot Greb. Richard Kind was going to play that role.
Not a Richard Kind type.
We're nothing alike. We never go up for the same stuff.
Yeah, I was going to say.
One of my wife's best friends... Barbara Fiorentino, fantastic casting director.
I love Barbara Fiorentino.
Superstar. She was casting that movie, and Richard Kind, for whatever reason, dropped out at the last minute, and she called me. She said, can you please come be on set tomorrow at like 6 a.m. and do this part? And I was like, sure. Like, I'll, you know, no problem. It was Tara Reid played my... I played the... it was weird because I played a professor, basically. And I was probably the same age as the actors playing the students.
I was going to say, you are like Ryan Reynolds' age, I feel like, close to.
Yeah, pretty close. I was probably just like 5 years older than them, but I played the journalism professor, and she was my student. And I met Ryan back then. He was so sweet. And yeah, that's how I got that job.
I've never seen that movie. I got to watch it.
I did all my scenes in one day.
That's great. And I'm sure they were like, this guy's no Richard Kind, but you know what? He's doing a bang-up job. Okay, Governor Donald Shalvoy / Charles Wilson.
Well, I know that one. So for sure, that's Law & Order. And there's two names because I did an episode of Law & Order when I was first starting out, and I played like a basketball player who testified against his friend or teammate. And then years later, I played the governor of New York.
Idea that maybe that basketball player went on to become the governor of New York.
Absolutely. You know, there's lots of actors who have played multiple roles on Law & Order.
They're all from New York.
Yep.
I mean, that's the thing. Me never living in New York, I never got to be on any of the Law & Orders.
That's right. And if a show runs for 21 or however many years it runs, eventually you're just going to need to start recasting some of the same actors. There's only so many actors that can handle... the drama.
Yeah, the drama, the of Law and Order. Now, was the governor corrupt? Were you under indictment?
Yeah, you know how like all those plots are like ripped from the headlines. That was Elliot Spitzer, basically.
Ah, yeah, perfect.
So, do you know I got that job because of Saved?
No way, really?
Yeah, John Cole, who was our director. Was that his name? Am I saying that right?
Yeah. Cole, right?
Yeah. He directed like a number of episodes for us on Saved.
I'm nodding my head, yes.
Yes, you are. And he called me. He was directing the first episode that Governor Shalvoy appeared in. And he said, you're a bit young for this. I'm trying to convince them, though. I really want to work with you again. This is like a little arc on Law & Order playing the Elliot Spitzer type governor. And I was like, dude, yeah, let's go. And so, yeah, that's how I got that, was from John.
Always pays to get along well with your directors.
That's everybody. Right. Seriously, that is actually my best advice to anybody. Be nice. Be kind. Treat people with respect. It goes a long way.
Yeah. One, because you should. And two, because people will remember that when they're like, should we hire this guy? Or when people are like, should I hire this guy? You worked with Tom Scott. How is he?
Yeah.
Oh, big feet, great guy. That's what they say.
Monster.
So tall. Okay, here's a couple more. Dr. Christopher Benson. Christopher Benson.
Jesus Christ.
Okay.
Well, I mean, I haven't played a whole lot of doctors, so I mean, that's that could be like a pilot that never went anywhere.
It says it's a TV movie.
Okay, that usually means pilot on IMDb.
Oh. Well, this is interesting because this is also the name of a show that was on Netflix.
Yeah, I know exactly what this is. So this is a pilot that I did, and Peter Berg directed it. Right?
Oh, wow.
Am I right?
Peter Berg, fantastic director.
And
good actor.
But I can't remember the name of it.
It's called Bloodline.
Yeah, Bloodline. Okay. All right. Yep. And yeah.
Not to be confused with the Netflix series Bloodline, with Linda Cardellini, I think, was in it, and
Ben Mendelsohn.
Ben Mendelsohn.
And coach from Friday Night Lights.
Yes, Kyle Baker. Baker?
Kyle Baker.
That's a cartoonist. Kyle Chandler.
Kyle Chandler and Sam Shepard and Sissy Spacek. Yeah, it's a good...
You know, for doing a podcast about actors, I need to brush up on some of my actor names.
Wait. So Bloodline, that pilot that I did, that was also... Mike from Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul, that actor who's amazing.
Oh, wow.
He was also in Beverly Hills Cop. Again.
Yeah.
He was in it, so I got to hang out with him.
Jonathan Banks. Thanks. I didn't even have to look that up.
Okay. So, oh my God. There was a... I can't tell this story because it's not a good story to tell, but there's a story behind that. And but yeah, that pilot never got made. And you know what? What's crazy about that pilot? Okay. So... whatever the story is about, at the end of it, the main character, who is my daughter, but you don't know it, she gets like stabbed with a samurai sword. It's supposed to be this like epic like type story, whatever. You wind up at the end of the pilot episode, she winds up in the ER and I wind up being her surgeon, and you find out that I'm her doctor, her dad.
Mm-hmm.
We set up an entire like ER thing. We had a whole like camera, like walk talk thing. We had to do all this stuff and do this scene while we were like wheeling her into surgery. And they had it all set up and they never did that. Instead, Peter Berg decided, no, this all has to happen in the operating room while you're operating on her. And I was like, okay, I don't know how to like do any of that stuff. We didn't have a tech. We didn't have any of that. We didn't have any of the props. It was just like this clusterfuck.
So you're asked to impromptu perform
surgery while having this like serious scene. And I was just like, oh, this is so, you know, crazy. And luckily, like, there was a background extra who was a nurse and was able to be like, I can kind of like walk you through this. And so I was like glommed onto her, like, yes.
And she's thinking, here's my chance. No,
for sure. And I was like, you're not leaving my side. Like, what am I doing? What are you handing me? Like, what are we gonna... They sent me... this never got picked up, so who cares? But like, I wound up seeing the finished version of this pilot, and that it's to get to that point, and they completely just cropped me out of the scene. Like, you don't even see me. You see my hands.
This happened to me during a dance number of Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, where choreographer Catherine M. Burns, God bless her heart, so fucking talented and awesome, really overestimated my bell hop and spinning, jump and spin and bell hop abilities. And there's a musical number where like I was in so much pain too.
Do you mean bunny hop?
No, I mean like a bell kick, like a bell kick.
Oh, got it.
Swing out. Anyway, long exhausting day. We were getting to the bell kicks. I'm just like, I know I look like the awkward big kid trying to do it, you know. And so I was like, I think I got it. I think it'll pass. And then when the episode aired, I was like, oh boy, here we go. Let's see if I pull it off. Like, here come the three of us marching down. And then it just slowly pans away from me to the three other wonderful dancers in the cast and backup dancers who can actually pull off the move. And I was like, fuck, I fucked up a shot. I really fucked up a shot. But I was...
do you think that was a decision that was made like by the camera operator, where he was like, and I'll just...
That was definitely... do we have any shots where he looks like he's doing this? No, we don't. All right, I have one more name for you before we're going to wrap this up. And this is a character named Santa Paws.
Oh, yeah. So that was the dog. I did the voice of like many dogs.
You're in the Air Bud verse. I did not realize this.
I am. I'm the voice of Air Bud. And then... what? The guy
in the original Air Bud, too?
No, because in the original Air Bud, I don't think the dog talks. But then in the sequel and all the Air Buddies, where the puppies are the main characters, Air Bud talks. And the guy who makes all those movies, his name is escaping me right now, but the guy who makes all those movies, he just always casts me. And every iteration of like dog movie he's ever done, I play like the main dad dog. And he told me one time that whenever he thinks of a dad dog, he thinks of me.
Wow, that's a high compliment. And now I hope that everyone goes back and listens to this episode again and imagines that I'm interviewing a dog.
There you go. A dad dog. That'd be great.
Tom Everett Scott, thank you for being here on Slate Your Name. Where can people follow you, or do you have any work coming up that you want to plug?
Well, I can be found on Twitter at Tom E. Scott. I can be found on Instagram at Tom Everett Scott. I don't post a lot, so don't expect much. I'm actually thinking of getting off of social media entirely.
Fair enough. Well, it's still hot, everybody.
Exactly. And I've got an Amazon series coming out next year called The Summer I Turned Pretty, which is not about me. That would be The Summer I Turned Old.
The Summer I Went Gray.
That's right. Which isn't a bad look. So, yeah, I've got that coming out. I'm going to do a movie with Simu Liu that has going to start shooting next week called One True Love's, based on the novel. There's a couple movies out right now you can see on Hallmark. Yeah. I've just been.
Yeah. Go find it. Motherfucker.
Man, I didn't work for over a year, you know.
Be like the shark, man. Be like the shark.
It was tough. Like, the pandemic was tough because I just sat around going, like, normally I'm on set.
Yeah.
You know?
You're like, oh, this is how Michael McMillan lives his life. Maybe I should start a second podcast.
Would have been smart to start a podcast during the pandemic, though, huh?
Well, speaking of podcasts, do you have time to stick around? Join us over in the Patreon for a story, an exclusive story you can share with our Patreon listeners.
Absolutely.
All right, cool. We're going to go over there. Thanks, Tom.
Thank you
for being on the show. We'll see you guys over on the Patreon. Okay, Slaters, you can join Tom and me in the Slate Your Name green room right now over at patreon.com/slateyourname. Follow Slate Your Name on Instagram at Slate Your Name Podcast and on Twitter at Slate Pod. And follow me on both of those platforms at McMills. If you enjoy Slate Your Name, check out my other podcast, Bigfoot Collectors Club, where comedy meets the world of strange. I want to thank Tom Everett Scott one more time and give a big thanks to producer and engineer Ryan Countshouse, who edits every episode of the show. Oh, and don't forget, if you need help with auditions, if you need an acting coach, I provide that service. Contact me at bookitwithmike@gmail.com. All right, guys, I'm going to try out another sign-off. This is a new catchphrase I'm trying on, submitted by one W. David Keith. That's it for this week's episode, and remember, don't call us, we'll call you. Slate Your Name is executive produced by Ryan Countshouse and Michael McMillan, and engineered by Ryan Countshouse. Our theme music is by Riley Bray. Please like and follow the show wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Brian Husky. I'm bald.
And I'm Charlie Sanders, and I'm also bald. And we host Bald Talk on the Campfire Media Network.
Bald Talk is the podcast where two bald comedians talk to anyone bald about being bald.
But this show isn't just for baldies, Brian. Harrows will love it too.
Bald Talk gets into vulnerability, vanity, insecurity, and self-acceptance, reminding us that we all have our respective bald spots. Not that bald spots are a bad thing.
No way. I mean, my entire head is one big bald spot.
It is one huge, beautiful bald spot, Charlie.
Get Bald Talk on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts.
I mean, I have like a little bit of hair, but not like you. Like, you're really bald.
I'm truly bald.
Great. I mean, it's
I'm
great.
I'm balder than it. You.
You are balder than me. Only on Bald Talk. Campfire.